Well, I'm an alcoholic and an addict. My name is Dion. And it's great to be here. I've been really enjoying this, really. The teenagers are great. I want to thank the, right? I mean, it touched my heart. I came into AA April 1st, 1968. So I've been sober 34 years, going on 35. My wife's been in Al-Anon 35 years, and so and she's in the front row here, keeping me honest. I have a lot of friends here, and I never thought I'd be nervous. We had a meeting on fear this morning. Said I'm glad I went to that. Found out. But the teenagers really touched my heart. I have three daughters, and they've never seen me drink or drug, by the grace of God. And they did well growing up on these principles. They've never seen me drink or drug, but they've seen me crazy. You know what I'm talking about. And we've been very fortunate that way, and it's devastating. You have problems naturally. Growing up in an alcoholic family is kind of confusing. But I want to thank Roger and Claire. Claire said to me, you look like you need a hug. So she gave me a hug outside the door. I said, oh, that warmed me up pretty fast. Thank you, Claire. I want to thank you, Roger, Claire, the committee, for asking me to come today and share. Because I'm not a convention speaker. This is quite scary. I just like to sit in the rooms as part of the family and listen because I'm a student of the program, not its teacher, I'm not an expert, and I'm not 34 years. I am learning, I tell you. People, I grow every day. So I want to thank you for asking me to come and share my story because Al-Anon, my beautiful wife, and AA has done, you know, just turned our lives around, made us real, made me appreciate things that I never knew I was missing. I had no idea. I was brought up in New York City. It's going to get rowdy now. You know, Bronx, New York City, standing on the street corners. You know, I shouldn't say I was brought up on the street. I was kind of forced up on the street corners. You know, born and raised, Bronx, New York City, baptized and confirmed in Mount Carmel Catholic Church, which was the hub of Little Italy, you know, in my neighborhood, and was the Fordham section. And 250 Italian relatives that all talked at once. No one listened. That's a whole new concept. My mom was super responsible. Worked, cooked, you know, did the, she's, we honored her Sunday. She's 87. My father's 90. And, my father, he just never grew. He's like an emotional 13-year-old. So my mom always said, he's like a child. Now she says, he was like a child, now he's like a baby, you know. So, it was a blessing to be able to honor her with my children, my three daughters, the grandchildren. She's the great-grandmother, you know, and it was just wonderful. She's calling everybody this week, talking about how wonderful it was. I come from this macho Italian neighborhood, and the code of the streets were respect and reputation, period. You had to have a reputation and you had to have respect. And it had nothing to do with character. We didn't even know how to spell the word. It was just intimidation. And Catholicism looked like it was suited for old ladies and weak people, and I don't know, you know, we used to have, you know, it just didn't make sense to me. But at times I have this wonderful, wonderful segment of my family, my aunts and uncles. They're like saints. I love being around them. Till this day, they're just, you just feel safe. And they used to take me to Mass because my parents weren't religious. I had this mild Catholic upbringing because I'm, you know, Italian, and that's the neighborhood I come from. So my aunts would take me to church on those kind of Christmas nights, you know, when it seemed like the whole Bronx was shoved in this little cathedral, Mount Carmel Church, and, you know, the candles and the stained glass windows and the organ on the third tier, sorry, Stinkerbell. You were too much last night. but, you know, the pageantry and the whole idea of being in church in this cathedral, the singing, the choir, the candles, and everybody saying the same thing. The teenagers were talking last night, how the dysfunction, the chaos. Well, when you went to church, everybody sang together. They all said prayers. It was the opposite. It was harmony. So at the age of 12 and 11, it was awesome to me. I would sneak in there once in a while, and I'd go to the altar, and I'd look up, and I'd say, is he up there? You know, God, where is he? Is he, what does he eat for breakfast? You know, what, you know. And I was just in awe. And, you know, in those real, tender, impressionable, vulnerable years when you're 13 and you're starting to become a man and handle your own emotions. That was the time. It filled me with wonder on one hand, and on the other hand, the lure of the streets and the gangs just kind of pulled me away because, you know, the boys, you know, let God help those who need help. You know, whoa. Your kid is here. What do you want to know? You know, so I, at the age of 13, I found alcohol, I found drugs, and I found, being my parents, today I know, I'm listening to the teenagers here, and both my parents had alcoholic fathers. My parents do not drink. They do not drug. They do not smoke. They don't even drink coffee. They just argue all day. That's all they do. You know? I mean, my dear wife and myself, we don't have much in common. We're very, very different. But we have three beautiful children, and we both love Van Morrison. You know that Irish soul singer? So at least we have something with, you know, to, no. I adore you, Susan. So, my mom bought me a guitar from a hock shop at the age of 13. Well, I heard this song, you know, we had our Al-Anon speaker last night talked about row houses, or I forget how she put it. We had the railroad apartments, you know. We were in the kitchen. I can remember what my mom was cooking, you know, the brajol, the gravy, you know, the whole thing, you know. And I heard Hank Williams in the back room. I don't know who put that station on. I had no idea what was happening. You know, I hear, well, in the corner, got the baby standing around with me, baby. I said, what the hell is that? You know. I said, what's the, you know, and I go back there and I'm listening, and then I heard Honky Tonk Blues and I heard Jambalaya, and I got on my guitar. I went up to the record store and I met Lou Cicchetti at Cousins Records at Fordham Road, and I started buying Hank Williams music, and I wanted to learn everything this guy did, because he grabbed the words with his mouth and he ripped them off at the end, and he got, and I said, I loved it. I don't know. You know, and I went out on the street with my guitar and I started singing Jambalaya and Honky Tonk Blues, and the guy said, "What the hell's Jambalaya?" This was the 50s. What's Honky Tonk Blues? I had no idea. But it sounded good to me, you know what I mean? So I became kind of like a neighborhood attraction, singing at the school dances, and Bishop Penacony used to have me, the special occasions. I'd come in with my guitar. Then I put a band together, and I became like, forget about it. I put a band together. The Butcher, Eddie Bass, we used to call him. He was like 40, but he was an old man to me. You know what I mean? Now I'm 63. What was I thinking? This guy was 40. I had an old guy in the group. He played bass. And I went to the church dances, and So it was quite exciting, and then everybody applauded, and I kind of featured myself as the rebel king of the neighborhood. So I started walking around the neighborhood, with my collar up. I'm the guy who sings at the dances. But what happened, now this is the mid-50s, I'm about 15 years old, and I discovered three things, actually, at that age. One was Susan. She moved down from Vermont. She had red hair and some freckles, and everybody in my neighborhood was named Maria and Gracie. I didn't know. No, red hair, freckles, this was a whole other thing, So I didn't know they grew something as beautiful as Susan up in Vermont. So I used to follow her down the street, and I'm singing. She's like, "Who's this guy? Who's the pervert with the baseball cap, And I followed her, "Yo, Susan." And, I did discover the drugs. The alcohol. I went to a party one night, and I don't know what combination, but I want to tell you. See, my parents always argued. And if you said anything about how you felt, it was like, don't feel that way. Stupid to feel that way. It's crazy. That's crazy. Never feel that way. You shouldn't feel that way. Don't feel that way. I'm going, how the hell should I feel? What the hell? I could swear I'm frightened, I shouldn't feel that way. Thank God I had the guitar, because it came out, And I discovered alcohol. And what happened was, I was at a party, drinking, taking some pills, and I come out of the party, and I start walking down Crotona Avenue on the white line in the middle of the street. And I'm feeling like, I could run for governor at this point. I'm like, all those second thoughts, how should I feel, what should I, all went away. All that second guessing myself went away. And I start walking up the white line, the tenement buildings on the side, and I'm like, "Yo, the kid has arrived." I'm like, I'm feeling good. I walk into the corner candy store, and there's Susan. And I walk over to her. And I start talking. And I couldn't say anything wrong. Now I was scared to death to go over and start talking to her. But I couldn't say anything wrong. I was like, I don't know what I was talking about, but I couldn't say anything wrong. I felt good. So the next day I got up, I started doing the same thing. Drinking, using I wanted to get back to that place. Because of all the insecurities. And I also discovered with the guitar, I was on the stoop, and there was a janitor, his name was Willie Green, a black guy, and he would sing, he would sing some real good, "Here it gone down the road, hey my down the road, and me wanna tell you, baby, what," I said, "Willie, teach me that," and he'd play the guitar, and he'd be like, Hey, bend down, don't bend down, down, see, see, down. Whoa! What? Jimmy, what do I, where'd you get that thing around your pinky there that you, you know? And, I just wanted to be around Willie all the time, and the teachers thought I didn't know what I wanted to do. I couldn't wait to get out of school to go sit with this guy. And then I learned a few songs. And then I discovered that I could take the guys in the neighborhood on a trip. Through a song, I get with the guitar, I sing, no one knows what I go through, and the tears I cry for you. And they'd go, do that again, man, that's a great... But if I ever said to them, no one knows what I go through, you know, if I ever said... If I was in a barroom and said, only the lonely... But these guys would shove nickels and dimes into that jukebox saying, that guy's a great... Well, he was expressing everything we were thinking, but we couldn't say it. You'd get your face beat in. Because you shouldn't feel that way. It's wrong to feel that, stupid to feel that way. But, you know, that's why these guys... Anyway, I found out you could take people on a trip without threatening them. It's not a threat to them, you know? So, I'm in high school. I went to 7 high schools. I was really a problem. You know, I was a problem. So my mother shipped me out to Jersey to a disciplinary uncle. I got kicked out of the town. You know, like in the old days, the whole town got together. We got to get this New York kid out of the town. Me. And I'm not tough. I was like afraid to lose my watch if I got in a fight, you know. No, I acted like that, you know. But, somebody brought me down to, brought me down to a little record company that was starting called Lori Records. And I walked in there. I talked to Willie before I went down. He said, don't worry about it. Go give me your best. I went in there, sang a song. And they signed me right away. So I started making records, and they pushed me in all kinds of ways. I'm taking pills, I'm drinking before I go up there. Frightened, you know. I just, frightened of everything. You know, I'm out of my backyard here. I didn't even know how to act outside my house, let alone downtown. So I make a record. The next thing, you know, and there were no rules back then. There were no role models. So they put me with a... I said, I can't sing this stuff. Let me go back to the neighborhood. I kind of recruited 3 guys in a neighborhood. We went down there. We rehearsed on the subway. And we walked in. Of course, there was no rules. We just start, you know... You know, we were just... We didn't know nothing. We didn't have anything to, you know, match up to. And so we just let it go, and we got a hit record. And let me tell you, walking around the Bronx with the whole night, you know, we didn't have stereo, but every... The guy's old. No stereo. No stereo. Who said that? No air conditioning. So everybody had their windows open, and Alan Freed would play it on the radio, and it was coming out of every window. Hey, Francis's Kid has a hit record. And that'd be what, you know, Francis's Kid. That wasn't too cool, but, you know. So I got a jacket. I painted my name on the back, and the four of us would walk down the streets, you know. And it was quite exciting. It was really exciting to get a, you know, a record, and the whole... neighborhood noted. Now, here's an insecure guy, gets a hit record, everybody's noticing me. You know, to be recognized, whoa, you know, and then I thought, well, I was right, I am special, you know. You know how it was back then, that's the kid who could throw the football, you know, or that's the guy who could, you know, so I was the guy who could, you know, write a song or do a song, you know, and it gave me, it was good. And there were some problems. Because when you get rejected, you know, you come off the stage, do the best you could, and your father goes, listen, don't ever wear blue socks with brown shoes. You know, I could have swore there were some people clapping here. I don't know if they noticed. I had... So, you know, it worked for you, and sometimes the very people you wanted to be accepted by, you know, that kind of thing when you're a kid. That's why I identify so much with the teenagers. So I go out, you know, I'm like, it's an exciting time. Did a record called Teenager in Love. I was like 17, you know? Listen to this, you know? So, I'm out on, you know, I go to the Brooklyn Fox. We were talking about that last night. And Brooklyn was a foreign country to me. Jersey was like, that was like farmland. They had trees, you know? So, so the next 5 years for me, from I'd say 58 to 63, was an amazing whirlwind of hit records, movies, concerts, TV shows, you know, worldwide touring. I went to Australia with Roy Orbison. We were practically alone on the plane. We were talking about songwriting all the way there. And, you know, it was different being at the Brooklyn Fox with Little Richard and the Everly Brothers and Chuck Berry. It was like Fats Domino. That guy was like from outer space. I mean, I don't mean in a weird... He had a Cajun accent, and he had these little chubby fingers that kind of played these amazing... I was like, whoa. You know, I didn't see this in my neighborhood. This was great stuff. So, you know, and then I got a royalty check. Whoa. Hello. I mean, it was like $4,000. I went up to Fordham Road, and I said, give me that one. And it was a Ford Thunderbird, you know, with... black leather with bucket seats and wire chrome wheels, and I jumped in the, you know, I gave the guy the money, and I'm driving down Crotona Avenue again looking for Sue. Made sure my sleeve was rolled up with the Lucky Strikes in here, and I'm, yo, Sue, queen of the hop, where is she? I see her. So I, you know, you make those turns on the four corners, you know. Yo, Sue, jump in. The kid is here. Queen of the hop, get in. So we go up to White Castle. You know, hey, baby. Baby, I'll take you to the best places in town. You're with me. So, and, you know, I'm trying to impress her. You know, I'm trying to get close to her any way I can. Any way I can, you know. Trying to impress her, you know. Order anything you want. What do you want? You want three hamburgers? What do you want? Throw a Coke in there. A romantic date. So at 19, I go on this, now I gotta tell you, I'm using, I need some pills, I need a little of this, I'm snorting that, I'm drinking, always got the drink when, you know, I'm like, I gotta get, you know, I gotta feel right, and I just can't feel right on my own, because, you know, I found heaven, I found some stuff to make me feel just right, you know. And I'm going for that, and like you heard, it's progressive. Progressive. The first stage is a lot of fun. The second stage is fun with some problems. And the third stage is nothing but problems. So I'm on the Winter Dance Party Tour, co-headlining with Buddy Holly and Richie Valens and the Big Bopper. I'm out there in February of 59. I'm in the Midwest, which I knew nothing about, and I never knew about people dying in blizzards between towns, getting stuck and all that. You know, to me, snow is fun and music is fun, and I'm with a bunch of guys on a bus. But the bus was a little yellow school bus. We didn't have, you know, a Willie Nelson coach here, so. And I'm drinking, I'm using, and we're out there, and I'm telling Buddy Holly. Buddy Holly was from Lubbock, Texas. He was, you know, Mary Jo, Billie Jean, you know, and I'm like Nunzio and Ralphie Moach. And Richie Valens is from the Barrio out in the San Fernando Valley. So we're from different places. I'm telling Buddy Holly, Buddy, we got guys in my neighborhood. Frankie Yunk Yunk, Joe Beebe Eyes, Ralphie Moach. I said, Buddy, we got a guy in my neighborhood. His name is Shakespeare. He says, to be or not to be? Which is my apartment? So, Buddy Holly didn't laugh. He didn't know what I was talking about. I think in the 50s they didn't have apartments in Lubbock, Texas. You know, if I told screen door jokes, he would have got it, you know, but... Anyway, so, it was such a horrendous cold tour. Cold, I mean 30 below zero. And the bus kept breaking down, no heater. And, it was horrendous. So he decided to charter a plane and recruit, you know, the headliners and try to get to Fargo, North Dakota from Clear Lake, Iowa. And, my parents, all I ever heard, because I told you, my father's an emotional 13-year-old. Work to him was a novelty. It was like, somewhere about some years ago, he said, I retired. I was going, retired from what? He never paid taxes. He never made enough money to pay taxes. And my mother was always complaining. What about the rent? The rent, the rent. The rent was $36 a month. So when Buddy Holly said, you know, it's going to cost $36 to, you know, I'm going to chip in here and we're going to fly. I said, that's a whole month's rent. So this stuff that I hated with all the arguing in my house, saved my life, actually. Because my head hadn't, you know, expanded, you know, to the place where I could spend $36 for a 45-minute flight. I said, no. So they flipped the coin and one of the musicians, one of the other guys went. And the plane crashed that night, killing all aboard. And the next morning, when we got to Fargo, North Dakota, and I walked into the hotel, it was on the TV, it was like I couldn't even get my aunt, you know. It was horrendous. It was baffling. At 19 years old, you know, this is the best thing in the world that happened to me. I had a hit record. With other guys who had here, we were on tour for 2 weeks playing guitars in the back of the bus. You know what fun that is for a teenager? You know what I'm talking about, right? You go out with your friends, playing music, eating together, all this stuff, you know. I wish we had tapes of what we did, you know. And, they're gone. Gone! And I'm on the bus with all these guitars and their outfits, and I'm wondering, what the hell is life about? It was the best thing that ever happened to me, you know, in my mind. And why am I here? Who am I? What's this about? You know, I'm like going through all these questions. Where am I going? You know, that kind of thing. I don't know if I was thinking of them like questions like that. I've been talking for 45... No, I better get out of here. So, whoa. Anyway... I'm wondering, what is life about? I had no idea. What I did was got a bottle, start drinking. Asked some of the musicians to give me some pills, you know. That was my answer to it. That put me in kind of a tailspin. But I gotta tell you, there was a priest, when I was young, and Rebel Without a Cause, the movie was out, he called me over, he was sitting on the church steps, and he said, Dion, come over here. What's this Rebel Without a Cause? I said, yo, Father Joe, it's a movie, James Dean, it's a good movie. He says, no. What's this rebel without a cause? Why rebel without a cause? Why don't you rebel for the truth? You know, and he started giving me this whole lecture. I'm going, yeah, Father, don't worry about it. I'll talk to you later, you know. Ralphie Moach is waiting for me, you know. So, but it never left my mind. What is truth? You know, what is that, you know? It dawned on me much later after I got an AA that he was the real hero, the real rebel, the real radical one in the neighborhood, not the guys that I thought were cool, because a lot of those guys went to jail, they died, a lot of them are very broken, they know, you know what I mean? That mask, the macho thing, you know? So after the tour, I'm in shock. I was living with my parents, and Susan would come over the house, and she said I didn't come out of the house for two weeks. I was like singing their songs, you know, that kind of. I wasn't together emotionally. I mean, and nobody asked me anything in my neighborhood. Nobody said, "How do you feel?" You know, there was no like what do they call that? Grief therapy? What do they call that? We didn't have that in my neighborhood. It was like, "Hey, you know what Tessie said?" She said she wanted to come, you know, it was like business as usual, like nothing went on, you know. So but I got back, and I got back on my feet, and I started writing about all the people in my neighborhood that seemed bigger than life. You know, like there was this guy, Jackie Burns. He had tattoos all over his body, you know, Flo, Janie, Marie, you know. And then he finally had, every time he'd break off with a girl, he had the name covered up with a leopard or, you know. And then he had Rosie on his chest. He broke off with her. He had it covered up with a battleship. So we wrote this song, you know, Flo on my left arm, Mary on my right. Janie is the girl that I'll be with tonight. When she asks me which one I love the best, I tear open my shirt and I show Rosie on my chest because I'm the wanderer. Yeah, I'm the one, you know what I mean? And a lot of people don't know that that's a sad song. It says, I roam from town to town. I go through life without a care. I'm as happy as a clown. How many clowns are happy? You know, with my two fists of iron, but I'm going nowhere. You see, we made it sound like a whole lot of fun, but it was a sad song. And then so I get I do this song, Run Around Sue. It was a girl in my neighborhood called. I mean, I don't forget her name, but it didn't rhyme with anything, so we called it something. Got a contract with Columbia Records when I was 21. 5 years, I'm at the top of my profession. I'm starting to crank out hits. They were coming. I just had a gift, you know, like with some of these things, just a gift. And I made a lot of money, more money than, you know, my uncles, they go out and work 3 years. They come back, they fix their kitchen. You know, they go out and work for another 4 years. They redo the living. You know, they're hard workers, beautiful guys. Nobody won like I'm like making some money. Sony now, but Columbia Records sends me to Europe. I take Susan. We're young. We go to, you know, and I'm drinking. I'm got my pills. I got my whatever. We go to Europe, and we're going through England, Spain, France. I think we were in Spain one night, and we're having dinner in the room. I mean, I'm like 21 years old. She's 19. And through all the fame and the gauntlet of flash bulbs and the fans and the, you know, the interviews and all that. Susan looks at me across the table, says, you know, I want all this attention. She says, Dion, can I ask you something? I said, yeah. She said, is this all you want? I'm thinking, what's she want, more flowers in the room? What the hell? I didn't know. I knew she was asking me something profound, but I didn't know what she was asking me. And she says, you know, is this it? Is this all you want? You know, and, you know, I said, I didn't know what to tell because, you know, after that plane crash, my wheels were spinning. After the plane went down, I lost all those guys. You know, I was just trying to outrun the fears and all the questions, you know, and I just drank more and I partied harder. And the hits kept coming and I just kept going and I didn't want to lose Susan. So, you know, I just begged her and I said, Susan, let's get married. You know, I'll stop all this stuff and I'll love you forever, you know, and I, all the promises and I swear, honey, you know, da 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 da. It's a progressive disease. We got married. She bought it. She was wondering, but she bought it. And, after we got married, it got worse. It got much worse because my feet were firmly planted on a cloud. I didn't have a clue. I really didn't know. And the mid-60s were the bleakest, darkest period of my life. You know, more drugs, more alcohol, more this, more that, you know, and I just keep, you know, and that was first on my mind. How to get that, you know, just to survive. And, you know, when I first, now I'm in the stage where I'm doing, you know, I'm in the disease and I'm getting some problems. And I'm trying to get back to where I originally was, just with the fun and on top of the world. And now I'm getting irritable, restless, and discontent. And now I start blaming everybody for everything. Like I'm a walking blame bomb. You know, you couldn't get next to me without me pointing my finger. You know, if it wasn't for you, get out of my house. You know, these are people that love me. You know what I mean? You know who I am. You know, that kind of thing. You know, it's like crazy stuff. This, it's a perverse soul sickness, the book says. And in this, you know, and I'm comparing myself to everybody. That's a disease in itself. Does anybody have that kind of thing going? Like, when you compare, gee, you know, Frank Sinatra did this. What about me? You know. I was touring and I went to Miami and it seemed quite nice. And Sue's parents lived in Miami. I have all kinds of relatives. She has two relatives live in Clear Lake, Iowa. Two aunts, you know, Helen and Ellen, you know. You know, they have a doily and they eat Yankee Doodles, you know, that kind of thing. We went to visit them once. Slice of white bread with some, like a, one piece of like, pressed, whatever. With the olive, I don't know. I'm going, you got any gabagol? Caciocavallo cheese, you know. Anyway, I said, let's move to Miami. I'm thinking, I'm going to change my whole life. And to make this fast, we move to Miami, and we move in with my father-in-law, who I didn't know and did not want to know. I was scared of people. I was frightened of people. I didn't say that. I acted like I wasn't, like who the hell I was. But I was frightened of people. You know, I just did not, because he had eggs for breakfast. Eggs for breakfast, you know. Who the hell has eggs for breakfast? I was looking for, you know, trying to get rid of my hangover. So I get up in the morning, and, you know, he say, Dion, look for a place. Stay here is, you know, you got a couple of weeks, just, you know, chill out and look for a place. And he'd read his little prayer book in the morning. Unbeknownst to me, he was in AA for 12 years, right? So I'm sitting, and Susan didn't know what it was. She didn't know what it was. Oh, at that time you did. Yeah, at that time you did. She knew at that time. Because she was in the program at that. She came in the Bronx. And we moved to Florida. And I'm sitting there with my father-in-law. He's reading his little prayer book. And he says to me, D, listen to those birds. And I said, what the hell is he talking? Birds? What birds? Come fly with me. My head's going, woo, woo, woo. Where's the bottle? to be honest with you, I'll make it short. I was frightened of him because I felt like he saw through me. I didn't want to be around him, you know, because he had a sense of peace about him that he was on a foundation of peace that I knew was strong. I didn't know what it was, and that scared me, because I was so full of it. You know, I was like shucking and jiving and moving and, you know, trying to program people to who I was, and you know the way that is. You live two lives, one on the outside, one on the inside, you know? And today, thank God, you come into this program, you don't have to do that. You're like genuine, you're authentic, you unzip yourself, you go like this, and what's on the outside is on the inside. What a novel idea that is. So I'm talking to Jack, and he starts talking to me about God. Never once was it like, believe is me, do is me, think is me. He just talked about, well, the God of my understanding, and, you know, there is a God, and, but, you know, he just real gentle. And one day, I went to a meeting with him. And let me tell you, I've never been the same. Never. I've never been the same. They were talking about all the stuff that I never wanted, I hope, would never see the light of day. I didn't want anybody to see that. You know, I come from a neighborhood. You didn't... Nah, don't let anybody know how you feel. They'll take advantage of you, you know? And I started going to AA. You know, I heard the language of the heart. I knew these people. I knew these people were where I was at. I knew they experienced the frustration, the resentments, the loneliness, whatever, the fears. God forbid I should even mention I had fears. To me, a real man never made a mistake. He didn't have fears, you never ask for help. Yeah. How come all the great executives, presidents of the companies, I mean, if they're worth their, you know, weight, they all have fears, they all ask for help, and they all make mistakes. What's the big deal? I don't know. I was brought up in a neighborhood, I thought you had to be born knowing everything. You know, talking to me, what do you want to know? I'll tell you, you know, I didn't know. Now I know why everybody was going, what's happening? What is happening? What's happening? You know what? Nobody had a clue. We didn't know. Anyway, I go to AA, I hear the language of the heart, and I hear about things I never heard about. I mean, guys were expressing their fears, but they weren't afraid when they said it. They didn't say, oh, I'm fearful. They talked about what was by, and it was the most courageous kind of stuff I ever saw. It's like these guys who brought down Flight 93. They were men of virtue. Men of virtue are real men. Not what they show you. You know, Hollywood specializes on portraying the bad guy, Vin Diesel, as cool. You know, and he's all hip and exciting and manly. It's jerky stuff compared to the real deal. You know what I'm talking about? These guys made the next right decision. They didn't. It wasn't a macho thing. This is who these guys were. They were quality. They were real men. And this is what I came into when I came into AA. I heard about, well, we didn't call it, but we call it principles. Honesty, courage, wisdom, self-control, whatever, you know, the principles are. And I started coming to the program. Thank God. I want to tell you, if you don't hear anything, I hope you hear this. By the grace of God, God Himself, enabled me to be sponsored and listen. I don't think I was capable of it. I don't think I walked in and said, hey, I think I'll get a sponsor and work the program. No, I was like Crockett Denial up here. But by God's grace, He enabled me to ask for a sponsor, and I said, how do you get well? And they said, well, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Showed me the original manuscript that said, never have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And I said, what's the path? He said, where do you find the 12 steps? I said, they're up there on the wall. He said, no, they're in the book with directions. He said, let's get together and go through. And I went through them like kindergarten. Like I was in kindergarten. Show me how to do it. And I did. And, you know, my relationship with Susan, we started rekindling our relationship. We got three daughters who I totally, they light up the room when they walk in. They love me because of you people, because of, you know, what this program's done for me and all the blessings. And our speaker last night talked about service. Who? I never thought about service.
Golly, I remember when my wife first went to Al-Anon. You know, in 1967, I said, are you talking about me? She said, who's talking about you? Nobody cares about you. Said, I'm talking about... Said, I got problems. I got problems. I'm going after me. Who ever thought somebody else had problems? I mean, that's how... I'm talking about selfish, self-centered, to the nth degree. You know, just totally wrapped up in myself. And I started going through the steps, and that's what I found out in step four. I think if a guy does step four that I'm sponsoring, he comes in step five, he says, I found out I'm selfish, self-centered, self-seeking, fearful, dishonest, and inconsiderate. I say, great fifth step. Let's go for lunch. You know what I mean? Period. Forget all the papers and the therapy stuff with the big, you know, it's a simple program, you selfish. So, I went through the steps, and what does it say? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry this message to alcoholics. What message? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry this message to alcoholics. What message? Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we carry this message to alcoholics. And that's what happened to me. I had a spiritual awakening. It was almost like a divine exchange. It was like God saying, hey, Dion, you're so fearful and broken and you don't even know how to laugh anymore. You don't know how to enjoy people. You're frightened. Why don't you give me all that stuff and I'll give you some health and power and serenity and wisdom. And I'm going, well, let me think about this because I'm like, so my whole life was backwards. It used to be what I did determined who I was, you know. You do all this stuff to get there. Now it's who I am determines what I do. And I had it backwards. And so I come in and I'm growing slowly. We had a great meeting this morning on fear. I forget who chaired it. It was just superb. I want to just share one thing I'm over, but just hang with me for a second. I'm nervous. When I'm nervous, I talk a lot. I hated my parents. I hated the Catholic Church. I hated I'm Italian. I hated Italians. I really, sorry to tell you. I'm like, I just had all that stuff. You know that, I'm the only person. I hate that show, The Sopranos. I can't stand it. It's like about a bunch of buffoons, you know, lying, cheating jerk-offs, you know. And I know, you know, that's what I hated. And it's like 1% of Italian. You know, when I met real Italian, I saw a very refined, like really, I went to Rome. I saw all this beautiful art and music and spirituality and passion and food. Let's say it just like there, you know. So, but I embraced being Italian at its best, and I love it. Something happened to me, and I changed. And I saw my parents, and I said, "You want to know? I am not going to hate them. They got their own set of obstacles, and God knows, I really don't understand that." Like the kids last night talked about it. Wow, a wisdom beyond their years. Accepting their fathers like that, and you know what beauty, what maturity, to say, hey, that's not going to stop my life. You know, that's who he is. That's the choices he made. You know, here's my life. And what am I going to do? Am I going to live like a victim? No. You see, there's a lot of people that won't. They don't want to get out of that role. They don't want to change. They want to stay in the victim role. And again, by the grace of God, I had a great sponsor, and he got me out of some of this stuff. And I fell in love with the church. I went back to confession. I think you meet the nicest people at confession. It's an awesome sacrament. I'm like talking. I said, Father Joe, I said, I was anti this and anti, you know, and for years I've been fighting, and now I finally see what the church really is. You know, what it really is. And he said, got up from his seat. He said, Dion, welcome home. And he gave me a hug, you know, and the guy's been just a great spiritual director in my life. And it's wonderful to be about my father's business. It's a privilege to serve. It's a privilege to be here. And I want to thank you so much what you did for... Let me tell you, I got to tell you a story about an Al-Anon moment. Before I leave, an Al-Anon moment. I found this out 5 years after my wife, after I came into AA, because I heard a story one night. It seems like she went to a meeting and her sponsor said to her, oh, well, you tell your husband that you've been trying to help him and that you don't know the answers. And then tell him that there are a bunch of people who know the answers to his problem. And then you tell him you're busy and you got to go do something. So I tried to start an argument with Susan one day, and she said, Dion, she said, you know, I've been trying to help you for 8 years. You know, you want to know something? I really don't have the answer to your problems. Hey, but there are a group of people who found the solution, who know the way out of, have the answers. Excuse me, I have to get some orange juice. I was like, I wanted to argue with her, but she kept moving. So I ran after her and I said, yeah, but da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, da 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 da. And she said this, and he said that. Da 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 da. And she said, you know, Dion, 8 years, I've been really looking for life. You know, I don't really know the answer to your problem. Thank God there's a group of people who really found their way out of this thing. You know, excuse me, I got to cook the eggs. And this went on like 8 times, and she kept repackaging the same 3 ideas. And it is hard to argue with somebody who doesn't want to argue with you. It's no fun. You feel so separated from life. Include me. She wouldn't buy it. But I gotta thank you for, asking me to come, because, we owe so much to you guys. You know, and the whole family does. My daughters, my grandchildren. You know, my daughters are, you know, they're out of the house. They married great guys. They did wonderful on these principles. And no doubt, you know, life has its challenges, but they did wonderful. And, you know, life is good. Life is good. A day at a time. Easy does it. First things first. And, of course, let go and let God. Thank you, guys. I love you.